Good evening. I'm going to call the Carson City Airport Authority meeting of Wednesday, February 19th, 2020 to order. If we could have a roll call, please.
Chairperson Golden.
Here.
Vice Chair Harris.
Here.
Treasurer Rogers.
Here.
Member Barrett.
Here.
Member Hamilton.
Here.
Member Police.
Here.
Member Simmons.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Fantastic. Clyde, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thanks.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So have the opportunity to modify the agenda. I don't see any need to unless anyone on the airport authority has any desire to do so. Okay, fair enough. Public comment. This is for members of the public to address the airport authority on any matter that is agendized or non-agendized. If the matter is agendized, I would respectfully request that you wait until we get to that topic. But you do have the opportunity to address the airport authority at this time. So with that in mind, if there are any comments from members of the public, please step up to the table and introduce yourself. Okay, seeing none, we're going to move on to the public hearings section of the meeting. I'm sorry, what was that?
The minutes from the last meeting.
Oh, my apologies. Thank you. Approval of the minutes of the last airport authority meeting. Has everyone on the authority had the opportunity to review those minutes? Okay. Can I see a motion to approve or disapprove?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Say aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thanks again, Ken.
You're welcome.
So, for information only, risk management review of the Carson City Airport Authority, I'm going to turn this over to our airport manager, Ken Mullen.
Thank you, Chair Golden. Last fall, we had a presentation from A.J. Gallagher and Associates regarding risk management review of the Airport Authority. And at the end of that, the Airport Authority Board asked me to meet with the city folks to discuss risk management and a review of how they conduct their process. And I met with Cecilia Meyer, who is the risk manager for the city of Carson City. And we found out that we had something in common. We share the brokerage firm of USI Insurance as our as a broker, and we use them for our aviation liability insurance. And she suggested that the city was not in a position to go out to the Airport Authority, review records, make a review of airport operations, and determine what risk management we might look at. So she did suggest that I follow up with Brandon Lewis, who is the Vice President of Commercial and Property and Casualty for USI Insurance. So Brandon and I have met at least three times since last fall and Brandon conducted a comprehensive review of everything from our lease agreements to some of our FBO agreements and also our processes and practices on the airport, everything from airport access control to permitting and that sort of issue. And so what I asked Brandon to do was to come today to make a presentation to the board briefly just about what the process was and some of the issues that we discussed. And at a future date, perhaps as we move through the budgeting process, this will get more dialogue when we talk about our exposures and our perhaps future types of insurance coverage. So with that, I'd like to introduce Brandon Lewis.
There we go. Green is good. Green is good. Thank you, Mr. Mullen, Chairman Golden, members of the board. For the record, Brandon Lewis with USI Insurance Services. We do have the privilege of serving both the Airport Authority and Carson City's risk and insurance needs, and thank you for letting me be here today. As Mr. Moen mentioned, he asked us to help assist in a review of the airport's current risk exposures, contractual risk exposures, and insurance coverage. He mentioned we do place your aviation liability coverage. The authority has several other policies placed through another agent that we reviewed. And the full scope of our review included reviewing the current insurance coverage, contracts, and exposures. As Mr. Moen mentioned, we met several times to discuss, to go over drafts and really work to fine-tune it. And the first section of our presentation goes through the current insurance coverage and some recommendations for those. We have some additional insurance coverage recommendations just for your consideration. And the last part goes more into the contractual risk review, looking at how the Airport Authority is managing the risk that you have through operations, through allowing third parties to operate on your premises, and the risk that that presents to you. Be happy to address any questions as it may come up during the presentation. And the first section goes over the current insurance coverage for the authority. And several of the policies that we reviewed started with a commercial auto policy written with United Financial Casualty, which is part of Progressive. And that policy covers one vehicle, a 2000 GMC Sierra, and it has the current minimum state limits of liability, which are $25,000 each person, $50,000 each accident, and $20,000 for property damage. The annual cost is $400, but we'd recommended considering increased limits of liability there. The authority, as with Carson City, is protected by the tort cap for bodily injury claims. Currently, that tort cap is $100,000 per cause of action, but the last legislative session passed a bill that will increase that over time over the next 2 years. So even though the authority's risk is limited by the tort cap for bodily injury claims, even currently at $100,000, your exposure is higher than your limits of insurance. We also recommended considering increased medical payments coverage. Currently it's $1,000. That coverage can provide some basic, you know, immediate medical expenses for passengers and bystanders that may be injured in an auto accident. The second policy we reviewed is called a miscellaneous property floater with Greenwich Insurance Company. That policy currently covers your weather radio, AWOS system, light beacon and tower fences and gates. And it currently covers it on an actual cash value basis. Most people are used to seeing actual cash value on your personal auto policy. If you have an accident, the carrier won't pay the cost to, you know, buy you a brand new vehicle. They'll pay a much depreciated value for that damage or repair. And that's the type of coverage you have currently on this equipment. The annual premium currently is $511. And in our discussions, Mr. Moen and I discussed our recommendation to consider coverage for other buildings, structures, and other personal property, as well as other property and mobile equipment. And finally, we recommend looking at options to get replacement cost coverage. Typically, equipment, mobile equipment like tractors, forklifts, and other items will be covered on an actual cash value basis. But if we look at coverage for buildings and contents and other things, we want that on a replacement cost basis. The next policy is the one placed by our office currently, the Airport Ground Operations Liability Insurance with Global Aerospace, which is a consortium, so there's several insurers involved in that. That policy was written on a 3-year term in 2017, and the benefit of that was it locked in the rate for 3 years. For the last 2 years, we've seen aviation insurance premiums trend up, not too significantly. There may have been some single-digit increases, especially for airport operations. We are starting to see those rates harden more. We're seeing the insurance market firm up and see rates go up. Where we used to look at single digits, now we're seeing double-digit increases for aviation risks. Here you can see the limits are significant. We have 10 million each occurrence, and on down the line, there's 10 million limits for various coverage, including hangar keepers, non-owned aircraft liability. And this policy is written on a very broad form. It's the same insurer and the same coverage that's provided by the Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool. The pool insures a number of smaller entities in Nevada, from cities and counties, airports, and other entities. And for airport members, they actually go out and buy a policy that's very similar to this. We've compared them over the years. And just as an example, the Minn and Tahoe Airport has this similar policy through the pool. And so our goal is always to make sure that it's comprehensive, and that we're you know, providing the coverage that's available for you. So no main major recommendations on that coverage. Our main concern, Mr. Moen and I were just talking about, was the rates increasing. So our plan is to go out, working with our USI aviation placement team in Atlanta. I work with various public entities throughout the year. All they work with is aviation every day. So we'll work in concert with them to provide you renewal options on this policy. The workers' compensation and employers' liability coverage, that coverage with the Nevada Retail Network self-insured group and Safety National Casualty. Self-insured groups traditionally can provide very cost-effective coverage. They've been very helpful, especially for industries like construction, manufacturing, where the insurance premiums, you know, have spiked over the years. The coverage is statutory, meaning they provide the coverage required by statute if an employee is injured. And your premium currently are at $2,218. Again, most likely a very cost-effective coverage. Our only point is just to ensure that the authority is aware that you may have joint and several liability for losses incurred within this group. We recommend reviewing that agreement with the self-insured group and just understanding your risk in that regard. Traditional insurance for workers' comp, you know, you buy the coverage, you pay the premium, and they'll pay the claims. And they're not going to come back to you and ask for more if you have a lot of claims. This type of group, there are mechanisms where they can come back later and assess the members almost like a homeowner's assessment. The last item we reviewed was public official bond for Treasurer Rogers. My apologies, there's a misspelling on your first name, sir. Apologize for that. And that bond currently written from August 2019 through 2020 with a bond amount of $10,000. Typically, the bond only needs to be placed for the limit required by statute. So we're not you don't need to increase that limit. What we usually recommend for our clients, and it's part of our additional coverage recommendations below, is crime insurance in general that can provide higher coverage for crime, fidelity, and what we call faithful performance of duty. Public officials can be set to a higher standard, and faithful performance of duty is a crime coverage that's meant to mirror a bond, that if a public official doesn't faithfully perform their duties and there's a financial loss as a result of that, the bond and the crime coverage with that coverage can address it. And the only example I found, honestly, is in a textbook, and it was of a, you know, a city or a county treasurer putting funds into a non-interest-bearing account. And 10 years later, folks come back and say, you know, we should have earned this money. It's not a crime loss. It's not a fidelity issue, but it's more of faithfully performing their duties. Any questions on the current coverage or recommendations?
I was going to ask if we could have that opportunity right now. So why don't we start down there. Paul, do you have any questions or comments?
I guess one of my questions is being kind of new to this. With property floater or if – so basically with all this, anyone who comes into the airport is covered with insurance. Is that what I'm getting here?
The general intent of our recommendations is to, and kind of later on in this, is to recommend requiring that, you know, folks using and accessing the airport have reasonable and proper insurance in place to protect them and the authority from the risk of their exposures. Does that answer your
what
question?
What would be the difference between someone coming into the airport having their own insurance versus this insurance here?
So the authority's insurance, you know, your aviation liability insurance, for example, that's meant to protect the authority from legal liability for bodily injury or property damage that may be incurred on or near your premises. That's meant to protect the authority. The coverage that we're recommending for third parties operating on your premises, that would be to protect them first, but it's also to protect your limits. So if there's a loss on your premises that another party's responsible for, it's their, you know, they're legally liable, their negligence. The intent would be to ensure that their coverage responds and that doesn't affect your loss history unduly.
Okay.
Well, Member Hamilton, if you were asking about the miscellaneous property floater in particular?
Well, no, just in general. I mean, I know the FBOs have to have insurance, and right. We're supposed to have insurance when we drive our cars in there. There's all this insurance. Now we're looking at a lot of extra insurance. I'm just trying to figure out a little, just from a global viewpoint, how does this work? What's insurance, you know, do? And so basically you're saying that it basically protects the airport authority themselves, even though others may have adequate insurance to cover whatever happens.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
John?
My questions relate to workers' comp. Is that an expectation of that being reduced now that the economy is improving? That number is huge by my standards for two employees. I'm surprised. Can you comment on that?
Would you mind repeating the first question, sir?
Do you have any expectation that workers' comp rates might go down as the economy has improved and we have more people paying into the fund, so to speak? I'm just surprised at that number comes. I mean, because my background is manufacturing, you know, 300 plus people, and on a cost per employee basis, this is radically high compared to what I'm used to seeing.
Okay. Yes, sir. For the first question, in general, we're seeing the insurance market harden and rates are going up for almost every type of coverage, except workers' comp. And it's not global, but for workers' compensation, and I'll be happy to share this with Mr. Moen for the board. This is our Q4 update for the insurance market from USI. Workers' compensation was the only one that had the potential for a rate reduction of up to 10%, with some up 5%. Most other lines of business were seeing increases. And that's more a reflection of not necessarily more the economy doing better, you know, folks having more employees, but more a reflection of just safer workplaces and operations there, because workers' compensation is all driven by past loss experience. And most business owners and organizations will see that your last 3 or 4 years, that tail really wags, and if it's good, it's great, and if it's not, it hurts you. On the first one, workers' comp in general, the market is fairly stable. We're not seeing rates increase. And on the second question, it's hard to answer in too general. In the business world, I would agree. You know, in just a general business organization with two employees, typically the minimum work comp premium a carrier will charge is around $750 to $1,000. There's always a minimum premium, and the employees will, of course, depend on the type, whether they're clerical, operations, manufacturing. What we've done in working with Mr. Moen, since we don't place that policy, we have requested an estimate from a workers' comp carrier just to see what it would be, no obligation, just to find out. So when we obtain that, we'll provide it to Mr. Moen and be happy to look at it with you then.
And then one more question. I don't understand the term joint and several liability.
On what does that mean, sir?
Yeah, what does it mean? Yes.
Joint and several liability just means that an organization could have responsibility jointly with all the other members in the program, or severally. So if and the homeowners associations to me are the easiest example, and the homeowners association gets into trouble financially, they've done their assessments over the years, but it's not enough to meet their maintenance requirements, and they come back to all the homeowners associations jointly and assess them additional amounts. So these self-insured groups generally have that risk exposure. It's a trade-off, because for construction, manufacturing, and other industries, it's been a much more cost-effective solution. But as a member of that group, the Airport Authority could have that exposure of being assessed down the line. So that $2,000 premium you see isn't necessarily the last amount you'll ever pay for this current term.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bradley?
My only question is, oftentimes when there's some sort of legal risk or legal responsibility, there's also a lawsuit that exposes you to that. And it's the cost of the legal fees and all the associated charges with that can be pretty significant too. When it comes to this kind of coverage, do the insurance companies get involved in any of the legal fees or anything, or is this purely to cover the rewards?
Generally speaking, liability insurance is intended to cover both the defense and the settlement of legal matters. And so, for example, your aviation liability policy, those limits, those $10 million limits include defense, settlement, judgment in those. So that generally that's there. There are certain types of coverage, especially in the commercial world, like directors and officers, employment practices coverage, where sometimes the carriers will make defense costs a part of those limits. On a traditional general liability policy that a business will buy, defense costs are separate from the limits. So they could defend it for $500,000 and you still have, let's say, $1 million limit to pay the judgment. There are certain types of policies where defense costs eat up that limit of insurance, but generally the coverage is there for defense.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
I'm going to, if it's okay, because there's a couple things kind of irking me here that I got to get out. And maybe I'm misunderstanding this. Maybe I'm not. Perhaps yourself or our manager or legal counsel can tell the Airport Authority why we carry $10 million in hangar keepers insurance. We don't own a hangar as an Airport Authority. We don't move aircraft.
Right, that's a fair question.
Would like to know why we're paying for that coverage.
Sure. The policy that's in place is written on a form that includes all of the coverages you see there. And so it doesn't mean that the carrier is necessarily charging for each specific one.
I beg to differ with you, sir.
Sure.
Okay. I own a number of FBOs, and at each one, we have to pay hangar keepers separate and apart from these other coverages. There is a charge for them. So I'm not buying into that.
Okay.
We go out to all markets.
Mm-hmm.
And the hangar keeper's policy is extremely expensive compared with your typical ground operations.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'd like to know why we're carrying that, because we don't need to be carrying that. Hangar keepers is only for if you have hangars that you are storing aircraft in,
mm-hmm.
and the airport does not have any hangars. We don't own any hangar space.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, you would carry hangar keepers if you are moving aircraft, believe it or not. It doesn't have to be in or out of a hangar. If you're responsible for aircraft movements on the ground, in other words, you have a tug attached to an aircraft, you're pushing that aircraft back. Again, that's not a responsibility the airport has. So the fact that we're carrying hangar keepers is kind of a crazy policy, and an expensive policy, based on my experience, for this airport to be carrying. And I'd like you to look into that, because I'm not buying that that's something that the insurer is just giving us, okay, based on experience.
Okay.
The other thing is, and this is not a comment to you, but a comment to the Airport Authority members, my cohorts, in all the years I've been operating here at this airport, I've only seen one uninsured loss, and we're going into decade number two. I know there are people here who have been here longer. I've only seen one uninsured loss, And that uninsured loss was this airport authority. So I appreciate the review, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we have coverage in place so that the airport authority doesn't have an uninsured loss. I'm not concerned about the businesses or tenants on the airport. They have other reasons and means to insure. When I look at the history, though, it's been one uninsured loss, and it's been Carson City Airport Authority as the one who took the loss. So are you familiar with that loss?
I believe so, sir. Is that the tractor?
Yes, sir.
Yes. And that we reviewed the policy that would provide coverage for that, but that policy is not placed by our agency. But that's definitely part of why we're recommending.
Why isn't it placed by your agency?
Prior to working with Mr. Moen, we were not asked to place that. A separate agency placed that policy.
Okay.
So we went ahead and reviewed all the coverage the authority has in place currently, even though our office only places the airport aviation policy currently.
And I guess I'm beating a dead horse here, but I want to make sure, are we covered for such a loss on property and equipment in the future? Do we have that coverage?
Currently not to my knowledge, but that's definitely part of our discussions and recommendations to broaden that coverage.
Tractor's covered.
Ah, thank you.
When we bought the tractor here in the fall,
we
insured it through the Greenwich Insurance Company. When Mr. Lewis began this review, that wasn't an issue at that time. When we leased the tractor, the tractor was covered through the lease agreement with Smith Valley Garage.
Okay,
fair. And to your point, that was one of the reasons that we conducted the risk management review in the first place.
I just want to make sure, I hate to ask the question like 20 times, but I got to know that we have that coverage.
Right, so. And the aviation ground operations insurance was first put in place in 2017. So that was a three-year policy. So that's a policy that is coming up for review here by the end of June, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
When it'll expire.
Well, I'm letting you know there's just zero reason for this airport to be carrying hangar keepers insurance. It's not a line that we have exposure with.
Mm-hmm.
Unless someone can tell me otherwise, I don't see how the airport would have that kind of exposure.
Yes, sir. I'll be happy to check with the underwriter, and we can ask him for a current breakout of what the premium charges are for, and I'll provide that to Mr. Moen to help address your question.
Yeah, and if that carrier doesn't want to, bifurcate that, break it out, go to another.
Absolutely.
Every carrier that I've ever dealt with for our business,
mm-hmm.
they break out that hangar keepers, and it is a big number. That's a big, big number. So
I'll be happy to look into that for you and report back.
Claude?
So I'm more looking for some education and understanding here. The hangar keepers, for example, since carry that dialogue forward, what if the FBO or a hangar owner or a pilot that lands here or a vehicle that comes on the property is uninsured or underinsured? How does that then impact the airport authority? Do we have responsibility to cover in the event that somebody's undercovered or not covered?
From an insurance standpoint, if an operator or someone operating on your premises, is liable for injury or damage, and there's a lawsuit or a claim, and they don't have adequate or any coverage, from an insurance standpoint, that's definitely why we have the aviation coverage in place. You've got the liability coverage. If you're dragged into the lawsuit, you're most likely be named in it to start with. And that's there to address that. If the other party doesn't have significant limits or enough, the coverage is there to protect the authority financially. From a legal standpoint, I defer, in terms of that aspect. From on the insurance side, that's why we have the coverage.
Then I would add to that, and perhaps maybe Ken, how do we assure that tenants are adequately insured?
Well, that's one of our purposes of having this review and discussing that, is to look at some of those. In the Title 19, there is some requirements on insurance coverage. They don't list particular amounts. Most of those limits and coverages have been listed in the lease agreements. And so the last update, I believe, indicated that the commercial general liability insurance increased to $2 million from $1 million. And so some of our review of the leases, which is next on the list, is to discuss those issues. One of the issues that we've undertaken recently as far as airport access control is to ensure that people were issuing a access control card to that we obtain driver's license and proof of insurance as well. So that's a measure that we've undertaken now to, and those limits are basically what the limit of the state requirement is. Much like our GMC truck, you know, those limits are pretty low. So that's one of the discussions that Mr. Lewis and I have had based upon the exposure to liability. If we have, somebody pranks into the side of an airplane or something, it could have a limit exceed their cost of their insurance coverage. So that's a concern that we have addressed.
You've said that cost of insurance outside the workman's compensation is going up. Got any kind of percentages you can talk over, say, the last 5 years and projections for the future?
Yes, sir. Just in general for the insurance market. Commercial property premiums the last 2 years have been increasing. Unfortunately, last year we saw double-digit increases for a lot of insureds. The general range right now that we're seeing for property insurance, it's a broad range. For properties with exposure to catastrophe risks, earthquakes, flood, or high wind, depending on the area of the country, we're seeing anywhere from 25 to 40% rate increases. For poor loss histories, those can be much more significant, over 50% rate increases. Liability insurance has been pretty stable the last few years. Auto rates have been going up for personal and commercial, but general liability and other general liability coverages have been pretty stable. But we're starting to see those trend up. We check with our underwriters each year for our clients to find out what to expect. And on a lot of the public entities we work with on the liability side, they're giving us a broad range of maybe a 5 to 15% rate increase. But on the liability side, we don't expect it to be at the higher end of that. It's not necessarily as justified. On the property side, they've seen just too many significant losses, fires and quakes and hurricanes over the last few years. So liability side, it's more in the range of 5 to 15. Other types of insurance, it varies by coverage. But the property and casualty markets, the property markets where we're seeing it, the most significant potential increases.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is that on? Push the button. Okay, there it is. I'm looking at the breakout for this hangar coverage, and hangar keepers, and it says that there's a $10,000 limit. Is that what it says for hangar keeper and hangar keeper's limit for each aircraft and each accident? I see a $10,000 on the left, and then I see a $1,000 on the right. I'm sorry, that's what it is. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. $10 million limits.
And so the $1,000 on the right represents what?
The deductible.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we have no idea how much of this premium, this $4,400, is being applied towards hangar keepers. We have no idea. Right?
Correct. We'll check and find out and report back through Mr. Mullen so you have that information.
For $10 million coverage.
It's not free.
No, it's not free. But I'm looking at everything else here and I'm thinking for $4,400 annually, it doesn't seem like that's a lot considering there's $10 million hangar coverage. They must have consider the fact we don't have hangers. It's probably what it is. Okay.
Steve Takis, Airport Council. If I could just ask a couple of questions. On the miscellaneous property floater, you recommend coverage for buildings and structures. What buildings and structures were you looking at?
The general recommendation is coverage for any buildings and structures that the airport authority owns or is responsible to insure.
That would be the terminal building, the lighting vault. Those are the two that come up top of my head.
Okay. And then the other property and mobile equipment, what's that?
That's more focused on other items like the tractor that's been addressed. Just, you know, other property, any type of other equipment the authority may have that if there was a loss, if you'd want it insured, just to make sure that it's properly covered.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome.
I'm sorry about that. I had to turn my mic on. If you could continue on with this page 4 of your contractual risk review.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, there were just a few additional items on page 3.
Sure. If you could keep it brief and so we can move this along, that'd be great.
Happy to do it. Thanks.
Thanks.
We provided some additional insurance coverage recommendations. The main ones I would focus on are public officials' liability. This is similar to directors and officers' insurance in the private world. A lot of folks will call it decision insurance. You know, you have auto coverage, you have aviation general liability coverage if someone's injured on your premises. This is coverage more for boards, public officials, and employees if there's an error, an omission made in a decision, if it results in financial loss for the authority, and there's a claim or a suit resulting from that. That type of coverage we recommend looking at with the authority through Mr. Moen. Several of the others are in here for honestly good measure. Employment practices, whenever an organization have employees, we recommend considering this type of coverage. And you see just the examples in there. It can include losses involving wrongful termination, harassment, discrimination. Active shooter assault event coverage, a general recommendation, unfortunately, because of the types of events we've seen over a number of years. If there's an event held, for example, at your terminal building, and there are a number of folks, you know, there in the premises, and God forbid something happens, this type of coverage can help the authority with its expenses that might result from that. Network security and cyber is another big one we recommend looking at in terms of protecting you from claims over unintentional breaches or hacks of your network, release of personal information. Crime insurance we discussed a bit with the bond. And then excess liability limits is just a general recommendation, and we'll do that this year just to review the limits you're purchasing versus the cost to just ensure that you're comfortable with that. You're welcome. And then on page 4, the last section went more into contractual risk review. Mr. Moen provided a number of templates and current documents for different types of written agreements. I reviewed the agreements and the insurance requirements. Discussing it with Mr. Moen, reviewed against Title 19, and made a number of recommendations. And the general recommendation, of course, is, you know, for folks operating on your premises, having access to your premise, to ensure that they have reasonable and adequate insurance coverage to protect them and the authority in the event of a claim. There's a number of sections in the contract where we'll not only recommend requiring general or aviation liability, but that the authority be an additional insured on their policy. So if that other party, if they're responsible for a loss, if they're the ones legally responsible, the intent would be for their insurance to cover it and cover the authority's risk in that matter to protect your policy. So we made a number of recommendations ranging from general liability, auto insurance, depending on the use and exposures, workers' compensation for folks with employees, commercial property insurance for tenants and operators, and aviation coverage for specific to exposures for tenants, operators, and others. I've listed the types of agreements that we provided recommendations on in more detail, but these are the general approach and recommendations there. Our goal was to make them reasonable, not only to protect the authority, but also reasonable for the other parties in terms of the limits being recommended.
Got a quick question for you on that latter portion. Just point of clarification. You have in here a tenant improvement permit, and you're suggesting that there be insurance coverage for that or for the work that's being performed as related to that improvement permit. Could you help us understand?
Yes, sir. That the tenant improvement permit, that includes recommendations, you know, for coverage if the tenant's having an improvement operations done. That one's more specific to requiring the contractor that they're hiring to have adequate liability coverage to protect them, the tenant, and the authority. So that one is more focused on what their contractor they're hiring has to make sure they have sufficient coverage, like you mentioned, workers' comp.
Understood. Okay.
Exactly.
That's what
yes, sir.
I just didn't understand that, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from, yes, John?
Going back to public officials, what I call DNO, it's hard for me, I mean, I'm got to believe that the city of Carson City carries that insurance for its volunteer boards all across the board. So what do you know about Carson City's approach to providing that kind of coverage to their volunteers that volunteer for various boards?
Carson City does maintain this type of coverage. It's my understanding that the intent was not to cover the separate boards for the Airport Authority and others, for example, like the Tourism and Culture Board. The coverage is designed to cover the Board of Supervisors on down, including committees, employees, public officials. It's my understanding that the intent of the city was not to extend that coverage, so we had not been asked to do that. So currently that's my understanding of it, sir.
Well, my understanding is that we're one of those that you described. And so I would ask that between you and Mr. Mone clarify that.
Be happy to do that, sir.
One other question. We've got airport insurance. There's FBO insurance. We've got Carson, Carson City has insurance, and everyone has insurance. Is there any way of, and so we've got, everyone has insurance all over the place. And so I'm just wondering, is there any way that we could reduce our airport insurance liability because we may possibly be covered by Carson City? I mean, it just seems like there's a lot of insurance. Everyone has insurance. And is there any way to work with that so we can perhaps reduce our insurance costs and still be covered?
I'd have to check and probably defer to our contacts at Carson City. We work with risk management, but I'd be happy to help coordinate that discussion. It's my understanding that, currently the airport authority has its own insurance because the intent was for it to operate and insure itself separately. But I'd be happy to help coordinate that discussion, but I would have to defer to Mr. Mohn on your side and, of course, risk management for Carson City.
This is Steve Takis again. There is one distinction. Many boards and commissions are created by the Board of Supervisors, not the Airport Authority. The Airport Authority was created by an act of the legislature. We are actually a separate subdivision of the state of Nevada. And so some of the things that apply to other boards and commissions don't apply to us. Now, I don't know about the overlap of insurance, but it's a pretty significant legal difference. I'm all for if there's a way that we're already covered. Most likely, the city's insurance would cover them to the extent they're a landowner because they own the underlying land. I rather doubt that it's going to cover operations on the airport, but it's worth investigating.
Yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of overlap, and maybe we could take a global view at perhaps eliminating that.
If I could dovetail onto that, one of the conversations with that is transferring risk, and transferring risk meaning that other people assume risk for their activities. And so in the case of the airport in the city of Carson, to Steve's, Mr. Takis's point, is that in the cooperative agreement that we have with the city to operate the airport, we have an obligation to maintain liability for those operations through coverages. The city, for their own protection, may have, as the landowner, have some issues that they seek their own coverage for, but they're probably different between what their concerns are. But in the risk transfer pool, those suggestions are, who do we allow to operate on the airport? Are they properly licensed? Are they properly insured? Those are all the questions that we try to uncover when we go through this review, as we discover with the tractor and, the snowplow and the blower and, all of these other pieces of equipment that we operate or allow people to use our facilities. So that's where we get into that conundrum.
I just want to be clear. And again, as John talked about, we think of this as director and D&O insurance, but I want to be clear. What you're saying is there is no coverage for the people that sit up here for bad decisions. If we're sued by an operator on the airport for some catastrophic loss to their business because of some decision we made, as it stands right now, we're defending ourselves and we're paying out of our own pocket. How did we get here, folks? I've never encountered an organization that does not have protection for the board leaders. How have you operated like that up to now?
Well, we do have protection. The liability protection applies also to the board members, the authority members. And even though it's been quite a few years since we've actually been sued, the lawsuit that comes to mind was a guy in a Piper Malibu who I think it was the Malibu. It was the one that was the FAA had grounded for a period of time because they had issues with it. And as soon as it was ungrounded, gentleman from Incline Village went out to fly and told his wife, call the insurance agent, get the insurance back in place. Well, he went out and flew, was practicing short field landings at the end of our runway, and he landed short of our runway and crinkled one of the wings because he came down hard on the gravel and hit the edge of the pavement as he came down. Only to find out later that his wife was still on the phone and couldn't figure out what insurance to reinstate, so he didn't have any insurance. Mm. At the time, he named the airport authority and the individual members of the airport authority. We tendered it to our insurance company, and our insurance company did the defense. Ultimately, the case was dismissed, but we always have been, members have always been covered. The distinction I think that Mr. Lewis is making is, if we have a member that because of their position has access to funds or something else that can disappear in the middle of the night, that's where there could be a risk. Now, we all trust Mr. Rogers implicitly.
I get that. That's more,
that happening.
That's more coverage for the authority, and I completely get that we ought to have that. But what you're telling me, Steve, is that there is, in fact, D&O type coverage for the people that are sitting up here, so they're not, by their participation in the decision-making process for CCAA, they're not taking personal legal risk. That's my question.
Generally speaking, that's correct. As long as you comply with the open meeting law and comply, you know, vote on things in public and it's a majority vote, you're pretty well protected. And that's probably why we don't see those lawsuits very often. I mean, we don't see them in Carson City at all, and we don't see them across the board. Now, Mr. Lewis is in the insurance business. He's probably going to see a lot more of that than someone like me would see.
Yeah, if I may add, the authority doesn't currently have that public officials coverage, which the analogy for directors and officers is perfect, you know, for a private organization. Our office currently doesn't place that, and that's one of our main recommendations is to put that into place to protect the board. As Mr. Takis mentioned, your liability coverage would respond if there's a property damage or physical bodily injury claim, but public officials coverage is designed for more financial losses to protect the board over decisions that are made.
It is hard. I have to say it is hard, even though it's like directors and officers liability insurance. The most frequent claims I see in that area, just in reading legal materials, is an officer or director who steals an opportunity from the company. And it's hard to imagine a scenario where that happens for the airport authority. And so some of those very common complaints that you might see D&O insurance really step in to protect, they're not a good fit for a public body like this. Now, that doesn't mean there can't be some kind of claims. There certainly can be, as Mr. Lewis says. But I think, as with all insurance, you have to step back and say, okay, how realistic is this claim against our operation and our types of liabilities? And in some cases with public bodies, there are greater liabilities. In some instances, there's less. But you just have to be very thoughtful as how you apply them. Frankly, The D&O insurance, I'm having a hard time seeing that. I'm not seeing those kinds of liabilities in my 25 plus years with the airport. I've seen a lot of airport board members come and go, and I have a hard time imagining that scenario. But, you know, maybe that's something we
can talk about. The biggest concern I have is that someone in a attempt to parse the duties in the self-interest from CCAA sues people individually as well as the board itself for some sort of loss, whether it's the interpretation of a lease, or it's some impact on their business, or it's because they didn't get to do business here, or whatever it is. You know, it isn't unusual to name the board and then to name the individuals so that you can begin to separate the interests, okay? And basically try to get somebody to testify against somebody else, you know? And attorneys are expensive. And just, you know, from the standpoint, as I sit here and I think about my own situation, I don't want to have to pay attorney's fees for work that I'm doing for CCAA. That's where I would like to see. I don't expect that there'll be a lot of financial liability. I mean, I don't see that. I'm worried about having to fund an attorney to protect me, you know, when I'm deposed and things like that. And that's the sort of thing that I think that we ought to have a very clear understanding as members what our protection is and what our protection is not.
Mr. Takis, I think you could probably find some verbiage somewhere in the Carson City's coverage or in our policies that at least kind of outline how we would be. You said likely we would be covered, but there must be some verbiage in some of our coverages that would at least outline how it would be approached.
Yeah, I did not review the policy when we engaged it in 2017, but I'm happy to do that. I'll get it from Mr. Moen. And, yeah, it would be helpful to know what's the language that's in there and how does it cover us. The other aspect is you ask insurance experts like Mr. Lewis, lay out the scenario where you think we could get sued, you know, because.
Yeah, find the seams. Find the seams or find the gaps, if there are some. It would be worth just the study on that to find out how we are exposed or not. That would be nice to know.
Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation.
You're very welcome.
At this time, I'd like to open it up to the public, any members of the public who have any comments. We're not taking any action. It's just a discussion item. It was just for us to hear from the insurance agent. But any members of the public who care to opine on this matter, please approach us, introduce yourself, and speak your piece. Okay. Seeing none, thank you so much for your time. This is not an action item. We're not taking any action. It was just purely for discussion. Unless anybody has any further comments, we're going to move on to the next agenda item. Okay, fair enough. Let's go on to, and this is, to me seems like a no-brainer, discussion and possible action to approve the forward lot line adjustment of Trimotor leasehold to Carson City Board of Supervisors. Ken.
Thank you, Chair Golden. You may recall in the past that Mr. Thurman Buzz Elliott made a plea to the Airport Authority through public comment about expanding the apron area for lot number 35, which is at the north end of Taxiway Bravo. The direction of the board at that time was to circle back with the airport manager and discuss this. Well, this discussion has been going on for several months, included a survey of the area to the south of the property line, And there was a discussion with the leaseholder to the south of that area. That's the Sierra Mountain Air Park North, lot number 37. And there's an area between those two property lines that it was owned by the city, and for in order to expand the apron to the south to match a similar project to the lot to the east of Tri-Motor LLC, and that space is approximately, after the survey, determined to be about 9,287 square feet. There was coordination with the adjacent lot holder about that, and actually there's about a 4-foot line of property that they're going to exchange in that whole discussion. And so there'll be a lease amendment to both leases, but the first priority move is to go to the city and ask for permission for them to look at a lot line adjustment. We did a similar action previously with Sierra Mountain, Mountain View Community Association, where we added the riser buildings into their leasehold. And so this is a similar action as well. It's not something that we seek other than to ask the board of supervisors to approve planning committee or the city planning department to look at that, and they approve it. Once they make that approval, we go back, we make a lease amendment, and we execute the lease amendments with the two parties as well as the airport authority. So the ask is to move this up to the next stage from the airport authority, if they to have the city board of supervisors make that approval and grant that request. And that's all I have.
Okay. Is the applicant here this evening?
Mr. Thurman represents Seibold, John Seibold, who is the leaseholder through Tri-Motor LLC.
Okay. Anything you want to add to the discussion? Like I said, it seems like a no-brainer to me.
It really is. And John Mays, the lessee of Lot 37, has agreed to give us 4 feet, which will allow us to put in a French drain to take care of water that may be running off the new concrete ramp that we want to put in. Mm-hmm. And that will be maintained by the lessee and of 35B, Scott Seibold, Tri-Motor. And that's it. Basically, just need to go through the Planning Commission now and get permits for concrete.
Any feedback from members of the authority? Like I said, Steve, do you have any comments?
Only that once the city approves it, it should come back before the airport authority with an amendment to the lease, a recorded document, so that the tenant and the airport both have a record of where the new lot line is. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a chicken and egg issue in Sierra Skyway. They came to us, and we did the lease first, and then it went to the city. And the risk is always it gets to the city, and they tweak it, the planning department, or someone else has some tweak to it, and then we're doing it twice. In this instance, I think it's worthy to try it this way, which is send it to the city first, get their version of it, and get it approved there, and then the authority should also approve a lease amendment that documents it.
I move to approve airport staff to submit Tri-Motor LLC lease line lot adjustment request to the Carson City Board of Supervisors for approval.
Before we get a second, any other public comment on the matter? Okay. Anyone wish to second this? Okay. Was that you, Clyde? Oh, John. Okay. So fast, I didn't know who did it. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Any members of the airport authority need to take a break or no? You want to keep going? Okay. Fair. Let's move on to item number 3. And this is approval of the scope of work for the runway 927 rehab project and design of snow removal equipment building. Ken?
Thank you, Chair Golden. As you know, last November, the Airport Authority approved a consulting agreement with both Hoffman Associates for airport planning and Armstrong Consultants for airport engineering. And as part of that agreement, we, in order to step through the approval process with the FAA, they scoped out one of our projects, which was proposed, which was the fence replacement project that's on schedule for this year. And after that project was, the engineer's estimate went to an independent fee estimate, and we ended up signing an agreement, and that was a five-year agreement for a consulting agreement with the airport authority. But what we've done here is to dovetail onto that work, and we're not signing a new agreement, we're signing a new task order to that agreement. And the project in question is the runway 927 rehab project and the design of the SRE building. As you may recall, last year we did all the taxiways at the airport for crack fill and fog seal and restripe. And so this year we're trying to get all the pavements on a schedule that includes a routine maintenance program where every 3 to 5 years that we get a grant to go out there and do and continue to do that work. Well, the runway has not had a rehab in about, I think, since 2012 when it was completed. And so we thought it was imperative to move this up on the airport improvement program list. And so we did that last year, and now this has come up. As you know, the fence project didn't get originally scheduled, and so the airport district office is allowing us to dovetail these two programs together. And so what we're looking for in the future projects will be not just the design of the SRE building, but the actual construction and then the acquisition of a new snow removal equipment. So the Armstrong Consultants has submitted a design estimate for those two projects, including we already had the environmental work done on the Runway 9 project. Also, that's going to be another component of the rehab project is going to be replacing some signage on the north side of the airport that was identified in our airport inspection. It was the Bravos connector, and then Delta 3. And so there's a couple, three different signs that were identified as being one confusing and then also not matching up with the ALP. So those are also going to be corrected during this project. So as due to the cost and scope of the project, that also required an independent fee estimate. We contracted again with a company called Rudin Associates, who reviewed the consultant's fee proposal and found that the consultant was actually lower than the estimate provided by the independent consultant for the program. So what we're asking for the airport authority to do today is to approve the task order. We will come back at a future date with the actual grant application. So what the airport authority would do, they would approve the grant application, then would go on to the city for approval at that time, since the city is the actual airport sponsor and the grant recipient. So all this does from our end is put the process in place, and then we tighten that up as the grant has been accepted. We should go to bid on this project sometime in March, both for the SRE design as well as the fence project and the Runway 9 rehab. So we're looking at about $700,000 projects for the year for the airport authority, and both to be done in this calendar year, hopefully by the end of the summer.
Quick question for you, Ken.
Yes, sir.
On the Runway 927 rehab, does that include a fog seal?
Yes.
Okay.
Crack fill, fog seal, restripe.
Fantastic. Yep. It needs it.
Yep.
Okay. First off, any comments from the public? Anyone want to speak to this matter? Okay, seeing none. Members of the Airport Authority, again, this seems like a no-brainer to me, but please, anyone have any comments?
No comment. Nothing good.
John?
Happy to bring my lack of a brain to this.
Okay. And once again, any comments from members of the public on this matter? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to accept the task order as presented. And approve the scope of work and record of negotiations with Armstrong Engineering Consultants for the anticipated AIP grant project.
So moved.
Second? Anyone?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Tim?
Aye.
Yep, okay. Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right, last item, last regularly decision-making item, I should say, on the agenda this evening, discussion and possible action, reviewing results of the airport name survey. Ken, would you like to take this again?
I will just give you 1 second to get my, get my visual aid up with the, in sync with our discussion. This goes back to our strategic plan and our workshop, and during that strategic planning workshop and once we defined our airport initiatives and or strategic goals, one of the discussion points that was identified under supporting economic activity in the region was the identification of Carson City Airport with Lake Tahoe. During that workshop, Member Hamilton presented a detailed amount of information concerning the identification of Lake Tahoe to outdoor activity and the growth and popularity of outdoor activity, whether mountaineering, lakes, and hiking, and that sort of stuff. And one of these in his business he's identified is the importance of Lake Tahoe to his personal business and how he has tied that into the location of Carson City Airport and its desire for increased tourism based upon that. So as part of that process, we decided as an organization that we would go out to stakeholders in the community, both on the airport and in the city, the tourism bureaus, and survey them on that question. So what we did is we narrowed the survey down specifically. We weren't opening this up for a naming contest. That wasn't the objective. But the objective was, as you can see in your packet, there is a specific 5 survey questions, and we sent it out to 481 people, and we got a response rate of around 250. So it was actually pretty high, I mean, above 50%. I think in the survey world, most people would be really content with a level of response like that. We had 245. And so question one we asked is, do you think the name Carson Airport, which is the official name of the airport, clearly defines where the airport is located? And very close, but the respondents, 48.5 to 43, said that they felt it did, and then there were about just under 9% that did not feel that it was identify where the airport was located. The question two was, do you think changing the name of the airport to Carson City Airport more clearly defines it? And that response rate was much higher. It went up to 72%, thought that added clarity to the location geographically of the Carson City Airport. The third question was, do you think changing the airport name to Carson City Lake Tahoe Airport would bring more tourism to Carson City and clearly defines where the airport is located in the United States and is preferable to Carson Airport or Carson City Airport? Overwhelmingly, in the form of 60%, people thought no, that it did not do that. There were 30% that replied yes and 11.5% that weren't sure. Question number four is, do you think changing the airport name to Carson City Airport bring more tourism to Carson, let me reread that, I read right over it. Do you think changing the airport name to Carson Tahoe Airport would bring more tourism to Carson City and clearly defines where the airport is located in the United States and is preferable to Carson Airport or Carson City Airport or Carson City Lake Tahoe Airport? And that came in with 54% saying no. And that 35.5% thought it would, and 10.5% were still unsure. Question five was to asking them to rank the names, and this is where it got a little bit muddy. But out of the ranking, Carson City Airport ranked higher. But if you to keep it the same was 14% to keep it the same as their number one choice, and then it kind of split out after that. Number two choice was 32.5%. Number three was 20%. Number four was 33%. So it gets muddied from here. But here's where it gets even more complicated. 48% thought the number one preference by a large margin was Carson City Airport. Number two came in at Carson Tahoe Airport at 32%. And Carson City Lake Tahoe Airport was down at 11.5%. So once you included the name of Tahoe, that added up to about 43% to 48%. So it gets a little bit muddy in that whole conversation. But ultimately, I think the clear takeaway from my standpoint is that the name Carson City Airport seems to be more definitive, although it's not, it doesn't exceed by 50%, much more than 50% in the any of the polls. So with that muddy water discussion on renaming the airport and whether or not it improves tourism in the area or closely identifies where the airport is located, I'll let you guys decide how that comes out.
Okay.
Well, that is all.
Before we decide, I'd like to hear from the public on this. I trust there's some people here who want to speak to this matter, so I'd like to open this up to the public because I think it's important to hear from our stakeholders and our patrons. So, any members of the public care to speak to this matter? Please come on up, address the authority, introduce yourself. Please.
Jess Edwards, in the interest of being safe as a pilot, because I'm sure the survey wasn't given to just the pilots. When you come in, Carson Airport, it's not Carson Tahoe, it's not Minden Tahoe, it's not Reno Tahoe. You start throwing that in there, that's not safe. So are we trying to advertise or are we trying to be safe?
Thank you. Anybody else? Any comments on this particular topic? Come on up. Okay. Seeing none. Paul, do you have any comments on this?
Well, first of all, as far as safety, when people come into Minden Tahoe Airport, they probably 95% of the time they say Minden. They don't say Tahoe. When they come into Truckee, they say, "No, I'm telling you, I fly at this airport probably more than anybody else. I fly down to Minden all the time. I know what people say on the radio." It's not very often that anyone says Minden Tahoe, okay? And that is a fact. I mean, you can listen on the radio. And so as far as a safety aspect, I don't think that is relevant. The other thing is, too, is if one of the things that as far as on, I guess we need to realize is that it's already Carson City Airport. Now, everyone look at the top of their agenda items. Carson City Airport Authority for the Carson City.
Yeah. Okay. Let me interrupt you for a moment, Paul, if you wouldn't mind.
It's already Carson City
Airport. I think the public needs to hear something. And, well, two things. Number one, you had raised your hand, sir. You'll get another opportunity after we discuss this, okay, not shutting you out. The reason, there's two reasons this is on the agenda, but one reason is something Paul just pointed out. And when you listen to the AWOS, what does it say? Carson City Airport, okay. Automated weather observation, right? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the 25 years I've been flying in now to here, I always thought it was Carson City Airport. Someone asked, what does it say on the chart? And that's where we have a little problem. You see, the airport, according to the FAA, is called Carson Airport. And that's what it says on the chart. And that's how it's referred to in all FAA publications. That's one of the reasons we're having this discussion. So hopefully that clarifies that matter. Didn't want to interrupt, but let's keep it salient to the point.
Yeah, it's important we all realize it's Carson City Airport right now. The aeronautical charts say Carson. So before we go any further, I mean, that needs to be understood. And I've got all kinds of documents here. It's on Ken's card. It's listed on the front of the airport, Carson City Airport. So it's already the Carson City Airport.
But it's not, according to the FAA.
Not according to the FAA.
That's where we have a bridge we need to cross. So
the other thing is, too, is that from my understanding, we're trying to increase our market and attract more people. And Tahoe is one of the greatest landmarks in the United States. It's when you look at the tourism industry. Unfortunately, I don't have all the details, but you've got Disneyland, Napa, and Lake Tahoe. Now, with that kind of a tourist attraction, it would seem if we really want to grow, then we ought to include Tahoe. Now, I've done this in my business already and been very successful at it. That's why I'm probably one of the only flight schools who survived here over the years and thriving. So those are the thoughts of why we would want to do this. Now, as far as the FAA naming it, going in Carson City, on the radio, every single syllable that's uttered is counts. Carson City, there's four syllables. Carson, two syllables. So in that respect, I would not be really in favor of putting it on the aeronautical charts as Carson City, because then we're going to have more basic radio chatter, which I would like to avoid.
John?
I have a barely perceptible dog in the hunt, since I'm not a pilot.
Okay.
So but I can look at the statistics, and if on aggregate we think it's appropriate to change it to Carson City Airport, I'm fine with that.
Okay. I always trust Bradley. He's my right-hand man. What do you say, Brad?
I don't have an opinion.
Okay. Go ahead.
As a pilot, I favor Carson City Airport. When we announce, we announce it's Carson traffic. You know, we truncate it. We do that down in Minden. We do it up in Truckee. In all my experience, which isn't a lot, but in my experience, we truncate the airport's name mainly just to identify yourself in the local area, and it's not trying to send out any kind of a marketing message. So I favor Carson City Airport.
Well, I'm not a pilot, but I spent my entire life, if I include the time I sat at my parents' dinner table, with labels, because I was a newsman. And to me, I don't really care, but it is what it is. It's the Carson City Airport. So I'll just go along with whatever the majority here wants to do. But it is what it is. It's the Carson City Airport. We can change it to the Red Rose Airport if we want to.
Tim?
Thanks. Being a pilot, there's absolutely no concern for me as a pilot either way. I would like to, but I do want to at least acknowledge if there's a survey done, and the survey does tend to favor Carson City, I have no problem with it. I'm not going to call it out any different, and I'm sure Paul won't either. It'll always be Carson traffic.
I guess I'm different then. I had a couple operations this morning, and I thought it was going to be a calm, nice day to fly. And, well, it's pretty windy, but it was still nice. And I've always said Carson City traffic. I mean, it just, you know, whatever, you know, and I don't, I'm almost ambivalent towards this. Yeah. So I do, before I want to turn this over to the public again, I'd like to hear from our legal counsel on his opinion as a pilot.
Well, I also use Carson City traffic, and I don't see a problem with that. I'm persuaded by what I think is a very significant response to the survey that Carson City Airport is preferable to Carson Airport.
I don't have a
legal opinion to give you.
Oh no,
because you guys can change it to whatever you want to. As Supervisor Barrett said, you can call it the Red Rose Airport if you want to, but. I think it'll probably always be the Carson City Airport to most of us.
Yeah. I honestly didn't even know until it was brought to our attention in this discussion that all the charts had it as Carson Airport. I never even paid attention to that. All the time, all the, you know, 25 plus years of landings and departures, I never paid attention to that. So, members of the public, would you like to address us with... Now that you've heard our discussion, there's a real hot button issue, obviously, right? And if you could introduce yourself, please. Turn the mic on. Thanks.
My name's Pete Norman. I'm a hangar owner and a pilot here at Carson. And the reason I want to comment on this, I don't have an opinion in either direction. I just want to give you a little history. When I was based at South Lake Tahoe Airport for about 10 years, at the time, this is about the mid-90s, Reno Airport took the name Reno Tahoe International. And at the same time that happened, South Lake Tahoe Airport became Tahoe Valley. And we all joked about it, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, the banjo music was playing. And it was like, we'll leave the light on for you. And at that same time, any commuter traffic that was going into South Lake Tahoe just went away. They closed all the gates there and the airport was basically shuttered and became only general aviation. And so Reno basically stole the thunder away from South Lake Tahoe, and they never wanted to fly in there because the approaches were different and the weather was bad. And Reno was a very good facility for them. So what it did is it really hurt South Lake Tahoe for a little while, not having the name Lake Tahoe. And at the same time, Truckee and Minden all added the name Tahoe to their names, and look at how they've boomed. They've grown.
Well, let me clarify. I know a lot of the history here.
Wait, let me
finish. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Is that working? Okay. Oh, you can? Okay, good. I didn't want to burn it out. Honestly, I think that it benefited Minden and it benefited Truckee in the sense that people, it put them on the map as part of Lake Tahoe. And I think really Truckee probably qualifies for that. It's a shorter drive to the lake. And from a standpoint of pilots, we don't care because we know how a map looks and we know what's close. We're going to fly into an airport that's going to give us the best advantage to getting to where we go, especially if we're touristing it, going someplace. What it did do for Minden is Minden's got skydiving there, and there's lots of tourist brochures that are published that have the name Tahoe on them instead of just, in the case of Carson City, where it would just say Carson City, which, you know, they don't know where that is if they're from somewhere else, how long of a drive it is to get there. So if you wanted, like for Paul, he could publish Carson Tahoe on his brochure, and it would attract people to his business, and it could benefit in that case. From a pilot standpoint, I don't think it makes an iota. It maybe gives you pride that if you live up in Incline Village, you might say, well, I have my airplane at Carson and now it's Carson Tahoe, so I feel good about it. Otherwise, that's the only thing I can say. So I just want to bring that dialogue. I don't have an opposition to it, but I think it's goofy. Either way, we have to change the name on the map from Carson to Carson Tahoe because it could be Carson, California, but they don't have an airport at Carson, California. But anyhow, that's my 2 cents worth. And
let me clarify 2 things for you. Tahoe went back to Lake Tahoe Airport.
Yes, it did.
Yep.
Yes.
And there is a reason why Truckee has always been Truckee Tahoe Airport that you're probably unfamiliar with. The taxpayers of the airport district, because it is an airport district, are overwhelmingly paying on the lake side. So people who are on the lake in the district, Incline is not part of the district, but Kings Beach is, Tahoe City is, Homewood is, all the way down to Bliss State Park is part of that airport district, all the way north to Sierra County, all the way east to the state line, all the way west to Blue Canyon. They all pay taxes into the district, and in fact, the lake side of the district, last I checked, funds about 60% of the tax, yeah, of the airport, in the taxes. And it was established that way. Not the 60%, but the district was established. So this district is huge. And there's a vast majority of tax money coming in from Tahoe. And when the district was established, part of it was, okay, we need to have these guys in the district for the money. We're going to have to make sure that, you know, we give them some acknowledgement. So that's how it got to be Truckee Tahoe. And one other thing that people don't know, this is all factoid. The airport in Truckee isn't even in Truckee. It's in unincorporated Nevada and Placer County. It's in two different counties, believe it or not.
So does Carson does have some shoreline on Lake Tahoe, but I don't think there's any taxpayers there.
Yeah, it does.
Yes, and we're going to tax everybody up there.
Well, we have a claim to it if we want to do it.
You got a good point. I just wanted to let you know that's why it's Truckee Tahoe Airport. People make a real misconception on that one.
Good. So anyway, anyone's still going to use on the radio, they're going to say Carson traffic, whether you like it or not. It's quick and easy. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of the public? Step on up. Okay. Well, seeing none, I'm kind of, ambivalent here. Paul.
Let me just make one more comment. Could you go back to the question five, please? If we look at this and we use a little bit of common sense, and what happened was on the survey we said Carson City dash Lake Tahoe. We also said Carson Tahoe Airport. Now, so a significant amount on the survey basically said yes, we want to add Tahoe or Lake Tahoe. If we had broken this out to say Carson, just another iteration of that Carson City Tahoe, which is not up there, and Carson dash Lake Tahoe, both of those bottom ones would be cut in half, and we'd say, oh my God, look at that. No one wants
so they split,
any of those.
They split the vote, yeah.
Split the vote.
Okay. Yeah, so but
if you add those up, Then that's
when they win.
Hold on.
Add up the other two, you still lose.
Hold on.
That is true. If you add the other two, you still lose.
Paul, and again, I'm kind of ambivalent to this, okay? But I want to point this out. If you add up on the name survey, okay, Carson City, Lake Tahoe, or Carson Tahoe, you add those two together. This is on page 4 of 4, okay?
For one.
Yeah, the first
choice. For one, number one.
Yeah, you still lose to Carson City Airport.
Yeah.
Just saying, okay? I know you're passionate about it, but well, I'm just saying.
No, it's not that I'm necessarily passionate about it, but if we want to grow this airport, then this is a no-brainer. If we don't want to grow it, we'll keep it Carson City. It's that simple. I'm trying to identify Carson with one of the biggest tourist attractions in the Western United States.
Okay, let me make a suggestion.
Can
I just have a comment? I met with Member Hamilton this afternoon or yesterday, actually. I think one of the things he did that kind of piqued my interest was he pulled out ForeFlight and he searched Lake Tahoe. And when you search Lake Tahoe, all those other airports all came up. Carson City didn't come up.
Yeah. Okay.
And so in the case of somebody throwing a dart at the wall, to Mr. Norman's point, that you're going to look and see what's advantageous to you. It may not be the top priority that comes to your mind. You might go, hey, well, I don't want to fly into R&O because of X, and I don't want to go to Minden because of Y. What are my options? Well, if I go to Truckee, the weather's not going to be so great today or whatever. You may choose Carson based upon that option. And to the other point of Lake Tahoe being a international destination, people are aware of it. It is an attraction to the marquee piece of the identification of Lake Tahoe as being a crown jewel. There's that photo, and you may have seen it. I don't know if it's hanging in this building or not, with Lake Tahoe that looks like it's in the backyard of the airport. And so there's some value in this discussion. And when you do look at the totals of the numbers, the bottom, the top two come out to 452, and the bottom two come out to 436. Okay. So it's pretty split as far as the discussion is concerned. But there are definitely some pluses and minuses to the whole discussion.
Like I said, I'm kind of on the fence here. Anyone else, members of the Airport Authority, have an opinion? If not, I'm going to make a suggestion. Kind of beat this one up pretty good. Go ahead, Bradley.
Could come down to who makes the motion.
No, I was going to suggest that. That's exactly where I was heading, Bradley. This is why I like you. Paul, I think we're all waiting for you to make a motion, and let's see where this falls.
Okay.
Let it live or die on this.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly where I was headed.
I make a motion that we rename the Carson City Airport to Carson City-Tahoe, something that's not listed up there. So we get Carson City and Tahoe. It's not listed up there, and that's my motion.
Carson City-Tahoe
Airport.
What happened to all your syllables? Just kidding you.
It's still going to be Carson traffic.
You might get more support if it said Carson Tahoe, but just saying.
Well,
you could try that and see where it goes. Yeah,
really.
You know, actually, it doesn't matter as long as we get Tahoe in there somewhere. And but everyone really likes Carson City.
My observation is that shorter is better when it comes
shorter is better.
I do have a question.
Name. Yeah, hold on a second, John has a question. Go ahead.
Well, only because I'm the member here who's the liaison to the Board of Supervisors, I don't know the answer, and I'm curious as to whether this has to go onto the board or not. I assume it doesn't, but I don't know.
I don't think it would have to go to the Board of Supervisors. I think it could probably stay here. I need to research that. I do want to add one other comment, though. It sounds like the argument that's being made anecdotally by Mr. Norman saying that when you add Tahoe, you get more business, and the argument being made by Member Hamilton is that when you add Tahoe, you get more business. And yet the survey says pretty emphatically, when you look at the difference in numbers and the degree of response, that the people answering questions 3 and 4 said, no, adding Tahoe does not improve tourism. So if you're going to rely on the survey, that's one thing. If you're going to throw the survey aside, then do whatever you want. But I think it's kind of difficult for me to sit here and see that you went through all the work of having the survey, and now the suggestion's being made to ignore the results. You're not legally obligated to follow them. I mean, that's my legal advice to you. I just think it would be an odd thing to.
Yeah, we're not legally obligated to do anything here either.
This is true. You're not legally obligated to take any action.
Well, because of my role as city supervisor as well as a member of this board, I think we need to have the answer to the question I asked only because the city owns the ground under it, so they may want to think they have a dog in the hunt. I don't know, but I don't care either.
anticipating that was an issue, I went ahead and looked at the Chapter 844 of the NRS, which creates the Airport Authority, thinking, oh, what does that call it?
You're ahead of me again, Steve.
And I thought, well, what does that call it? Well, interestingly, Chapter 844 in the very first section of that thing says, this applies to any airport located in the Carson City area. So it basically doesn't even name the airport. It just says the Airport Authority shall control any airports in Carson City. So I'm thinking that the Board of Supervisors doesn't need to approve it. However, if you think it affects the dynamics of the city in some way, it'd probably be wise to at least bounce it off the city. I mean, I don't know. It seems to me you can't go wrong naming it, going from Carson to Carson City. I don't see that you get tripped up there. But when you start interjecting other things into it, if it's Carson or Carson City, I think you're safe, really. If you put it, something else into it, it's probably safer to at least get feedback from the city.
Mm-hmm. I want to elaborate that I did send a survey to the city board of supervisors and the mayor and tourism and et al. So they were included in that.
The responses are blind, so there isn't a way to see if they weighed in or where they weighed.
Yeah, we probably split 3-2, but we'll never know.
So, Paul, do you want to make a motion?
I'll revise my motion to Carson Tahoe.
Okay.
I make a motion that we change the airport name to Carson Tahoe.
Does anybody here care to second that motion?
I'll second.
That means we're going to have a vote.
We're going to vote.
All in favor?
Wait a minute. Discussion. Discussion.
Okay. Any comment on that one?
Yeah.
Carson Tahoe Airport versus the official name of the airport, keep in mind, is Carson Airport, even though we all refer to it as Carson City Airport. Any members of the public want to opine? Please. We love that you're here, so give us your opinion.
My name is Robert Hilke. Thanks for letting me speak. I think that if you guys are thinking about changing the name of the airport to generate more income, people coming in, maybe you ought to have a marketing team do the research to find out if it's really feasible. That's all.
Okay, thank you. I think the concept might be what Rob was just saying, is if we're thinking of changing the name to get more exposure is the appropriate, you know, avenue here. And I think that is something. And also, again, as I mentioned earlier, the FAA, all the charts refer to it as Carson Airport, strangely and oddly enough. So,
okay.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think our flirtation and desire to have night operations here more than we already do is far more involved in whether we're going to do well in economic development. Though I don't say we won't do better with the name Tahoe. I don't know. It's true that Tahoe is a draw, but I'm getting old, so maybe I just don't like change.
Go ahead.
My observation is pretty simple. When I was asked to join the board, the most from the supervisors, one of the most important questions was, how do you plan on helping generate revenue? And I'm always looking for a way to generate revenue for the airport without having to increase fees to the pilots. This is a way to, well, Paul would know better than you, and you would too,
mm-hmm.
as far as marketing Carson City's airport. I don't know much about marketing. It's not my field in this area. But if you two both feel it could help, I would go with it.
I'm kind of torn on this, to be honest with you.
Let me tell you a story.
Go ahead.
I'll make it short and quick. When the economy went bad, I had great engineering jobs. I went down to zero income, and I thought, geez, how am I gonna pay the bills? I might have to get a real job. Phone rings. I go to Hawaii to fly. I ended up flying in Hawaii for 5 months, and I learned the business of flight instruction and these introductory flights. So my wife looks at all the different places. She looked at we looked at Southern California, which we didn't want. We actually were going to go to Napa Valley because there's big tourist numbers there. And that fell through when we went to the board of directors, and they said, no, but hell no, you're not coming here with one of those things. So Tahoe is left with a third amount of tourists in the area. So we came here. One of the reasons my flight school is successful is because I promote Tahoe. And so for me, it's just a no-brainer. You want to increase people, you use a known quantity, and that's Lake Tahoe. It's a no-brainer to me. So that's why I'm doing that, because I know that will make a difference if we want to grow our business here.
So what I'm hearing is, I mean, I agree with Mr. Takis that the survey came back different than adding Tahoe. And it deserves consideration. If we take the time to ask, we should listen to the answer. But I also, what I see is two different types of business opportunities. I mean, if you are providing if you're a service-based business and you operate at Carson City Airport, you absolutely can probably increase your business by including Tahoe in the name. If you're the Carson City Airport Authority looking to rent, or looking to lease land to more people, I'm thinking that having Tahoe in the name of the airport doesn't do that. I mean, it won't have much of an impact. People who want to come here and house their airplanes here and fly in and out of this airport, they're not going to give a dang whether there's Tahoe in the name. But if you're running a service business on the airport, then it has value. So I'm thinking that, you know, we are not restricting anybody who works on the airport from using Tahoe in all of their marketing materials, but we may choose to just let the airport name reflect the results of the survey.
Okay. I don't want to sway anyone's opinion. I'm going to speak after we vote. Is that okay?
Sure.
You cool with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second.
All and the motion is
change the name to Carson Tahoe Airport.
And then I will be slow with my vote because, as I said before, I'm just going to go with the majority either way.
What if it's 3-3?
Yeah, you could be. You may be the swing vote.
Put me on the bubble, then I'll probably not please everybody.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 That's three. All opposed? Aye.
Aye.
3-3.
Sorry. Okay, so
slow vote. That helped.
Okay, did you blow that
one? Yeah. Let me.
Hasn't voted yet.
Oh, that's right. John hasn't voted
John
yet.
Hasn't voted. See, you did yourself?
Yeah, I did that to myself.
Oh, my gosh. As I said, I don't much care for change, so I'm going to stick with Carson City Airport. It's what it is.
Okay. All right.
Okay, well, we'll need a motion to change it to Carson City.
Yeah, hold on a second, because I didn't have a chance to opine on this, and I want to.
It's on the front of the airport.
I understand. I understand. It is. Let me state the following. In particular, in deference to Paul, you've given a very persuasive, passionate argument without question. I like the identity of Carson City Airport. I see something different. Our business certainly would benefit if it said Carson Tahoe Airport. I'm not voting for our business. I never do. I vote for what's good for the airport. In the present environment, in particular with the way our neighboring state acts, I'd like to see it stay as Carson City Airport as an entity in the state of Nevada. We have pulled a ton of business out of California into this airport from people who want to vacate the state and leave. That's issue number one. I also think it's important, being that it's the state capital, Carson City is the state capital, that the airport be called Carson City Airport. We have our own identity. That's my opinion. I think we need to not stick with that. We need to go with that because the FAA charts all say Carson Airport. And I think we need to be consistent with who we are. Maybe changing the name officially to Carson City Airport would help us in that regard. And that's why I voted against your motion. My apologies. I don't want to offend.
I thank everybody for the consideration and thinking about it. But don't worry. I won't take it personal.
Okay. Paul, you can make another motion.
You win a few, you lose a few.
Could I add something?
Okay.
I'm with everybody here.
Okay.
So, Michael, is there a motion?
We can have another motion. Anyone like to make one, John?
I move that we change the name of the... I recommend that the name of the airport be changed from Carson Airport to Carson City Airport to reflect the name of Nevada's state capital.
And do we have a second?
Second.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Any comments from members of the public? Sorry. Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. So, Ken, can you hold on?
When you're done.
Ken, can you get the process going with the FAA to officiate that name change?
I changed it a month ago. No, I'm just kidding.
That would have been awesome. That would have been great. I would have been thrilled with that.
Thank you, Manager Trump.
Okay, John, you were going to say something? Then let's move this along.
Yeah, I don't think this prevents us at all, in the slightest, from emphasizing our proximity and the opportunities that Tahoe gives us in our marketing. And I would say that it can help. I just don't know how much it will. But I agree with what our chairman said, that this is the state capital, and I like the fact that that's reflected in the name of the airport now.
Okay. Airport engineer's report, and I think we have that in our packet.
Yeah, I think you've reviewed it, and you've voted on the big item. We did have a conference call with the airport district office yesterday to discuss our draft airport capital improvement program, and we've got a couple items to circle back with them on. As you know, that's a little muddled right now with the discussion about the nighttime instrument approach. So we're not really, we're supposed to present a five-year plan, and, you know, it's a rolling five-year plan. We look at it every year, and the issue as it relates to the nighttime instrument approach is going to get some more discussion. That's on the next item in my manager's report.
Okay.
So I'll roll right into that. The fuel flow numbers you see for January were up versus what they were in December. We'll start doing a year-over-year analysis on fuel here in the next couple board reports. The airport emergency address program is still in progress. It's going a little slower than I'd like, but we do have some signage up, and it's moving forward. We did meet with, this happened right before the last meeting, but I don't think we got much time to discuss it after the length of the last meeting. But as you know, the FAA put a NOTAM out, Flight Check did, restricting the use of the PAPI for runway 27, the planned approach path indicator, to 1.6 nautical miles. And there's a discussion about having the, 1.3 nautical miles, and a discussion about raising the angle from 3 degrees to 3.77. So that brought up a broader discussion about the nighttime approach and an offset PAPI. And there is a couple of examples, but one of the bigger examples is the JFK Airport, who has two sets of PAPIs on a runway, including one that's offset. If that becomes a solution, that's a lot lower barrier to entry into solving this nighttime instrument approach restriction. One of the discussions was that the PAPI needs to end with something more similar, like an approach lighting system or a MALSER at the end of the runway, which would probably be the icing on the cake. But the cost for that project, the time to implement it is much easier. It's all within our fence. It doesn't involve property acquisition and all that kind of stuff. So we're pursuing that pretty hard right now, and we'll see where that ends up. A couple other notes of interest is the landscape plan that's included in your draft. It's a very rough drawing, but what I want to emphasize to you, if you want to take a quick look on the next page, let me bring it up.
Yeah.
What I'm emphasizing is really a concept that we were wrestling with, which was how do we – oops, sorry about that. I don't know what happened there. It went several pages away. Hmm. Let me get back to it. There we go. Is the traffic for one, we were looking at some sort of monument aspect, whether it be some sort of sculpture or something that reflected the airport. And so we're wrestling with where to put that. You know, currently to the right of the picture here is where the flagpole is and the monument sign. And then there's a little roadway to this gate over here, gate 2. And so we had a lot of discussion about this. And when we looked at our airport property lease plan, this area here is almost an acre. And so we have another area here for non-aeronautical, and there's been this discussion about a restaurant opportunity. So one of the discussions we had with the landscape designer was for traffic flow, we currently, this is a roadway that goes all the way through, and then apparently you could reverse course down here. It's kind of tight to do that. But the landscape would include sidewalk on both sides of this entryway, and then actually we looked at a traffic circle, but it took away some parking spaces here, which we didn't really want to do. So he thought about eliminating this section here in the middle and turning that into open space. Now, it's painted green. That doesn't mean we're putting grass in it. Really, what I would see is some sort of perhaps a monument-type art there identifying the airport, but also this being some sort of zero-scape. It would have a sidewalk. As you can see, this would be a crosswalk all the way here that would lead to the terminal. This would be, we utilize gate one here as the entry gate, and then put another gate over here on this side as an exit gate to keep the traffic flow. Now, granted, if you're going over here to the South Hangar or the EAA, you'd make this turn instead of coming across here. But I think what it does is it creates a nice entryway into the airport. We'd have planting shrubs, colorful low-lying shrub around the area here on College Parkway, similar landscape design, low maintenance here, some sort of design, landscaping design here, and then this open area we think would present a nice frontage to the airport. We're going to ask the landscape designer if he can give us some more concrete ideas as far as like the number of trees and shrubs and the square feet of sidewalk space that would be allocated, and then try to get some rough numbers on what something like that would look like. My purpose was to share this with you, chew on it, think about it, look at it, and then we'll come back with a little firmer design. But I like where this it gives us a solid starting point. So with that being said, I'll move on from there. I want to highlight the Nevada Airports Association Conference in Tonopah, Nevada, on April 6th through 8th. And I've also included in this packet the flight activity report for January from our JetNet LLC subscription. We had some solid numbers in the month, which is probably reflected in the fuel flowage as well. And it also identifies who our top operators are. I think one thing that's really interesting is the amount of jet traffic. Even though it is winter months, you know, it's been good flying weather, but the jet traffic is significant.
The Nevada Airport Association?
Yes, sir.
Talked to me offline after the meeting about that.
And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Ken, next month and each succeeding month, can you add a little item to your report of new business development? In other words, what new businesses or aircraft we've attracted, no matter how big or small.
Okay. And the way I find out about most new aircraft is through gate card
applications. Yeah, that's perfect. Let the airport authority know that we have some new business activity, or even if we lose business activity, like the flight school wanting to consolidate up to Reno.
I should have added that to the report. I'm remiss in that.
I'll bring that up.
Okay.
We'll take care of that. Legal counsel. Steve, do you have anything for us?
No, I don't.
Okay. John.
We are tracking nicely relative to budget. We're slightly over budget in terms of operating expenses and in terms of operating income, and we're slightly under budget on operating expenses. Mr. Moen and I have been meeting with our bookkeeper. There's still some anomalies on the report that make it difficult to read, and they relate to real property taxes, which arrived to us in a chunk this year, and we're trying to make a way to have that chunk go into an escrow account and then come onto the P&L on a month-by-month basis. We're not quite there yet, but we are going to get there, and we're hoping to have that cleanliness issue addressed by the time we have our budget meeting. That's it.
Okay. Any questions for John? Okay. Seeing none, report from authority members. I have a couple things I want to bring to the attention of the airport authority. Ken had placed on the agenda for this evening a discussion regarding our annual budget and fees and pricing, and I had, as the airport chair, I have the authority to set the agenda for discussion. I felt it was in our best interest, being that budget and discussion of fees was going to be a lengthy one. I felt it would be in our best interest as a governing body to have that as a separate meeting. So if anyone was wondering why we have the meeting on March 5th, it was my discretion, my decision.
Third.
My apologies. March 3rd. It's on Tuesday, March 3rd. I know that. It is on Tuesday. And members of the public, take note of that. Tuesday, March 3rd at 5:30 in this room. It would benefit us to hear your input if you could get the word out to, you know, your hangar neighbors, other hangar tenants on the airport. We sure would like your input on this matter, and I just didn't want to see that go into a two-hour discussion tonight. I don't think that would have been productive. So I hope I didn't offend anyone's calendar, but that's just the way it was.
Thank you.
Yep. So any other members of the airport authority have any comments?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I had the opportunity, because I'm a member of Rotary with him, of talking to the president of WNC College and ask him to give me a call. He did, because not long ago I saw a piece on, I think it was CBSN, about a junior college over in California in the Central Valley that has got a flight school and some planes. And so he did call me, and I mentioned that I was going to talk to you about this. They are starting some ground type of course already, and you may know about that. But if you could coordinate with him, I know we need pilots, and it might be a good thing for Carson City, WNC, and the airport. So
we have had discussions with the university president or Western Nevada College president, and they did commence a online ground school.
Right, that was it.
It began in January. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the receptivity of that has been as of yet. Pathways to Aviation is meeting in our facility on February 26th, and they do mentorship and soft skill development with people interested in aviation careers, resumes, interviewing, networking, that sort of thing. And so this is one of their scheduled stops is Carson City Airport. They also meet at Reno, Truckee, and I think for the third one. They may have one scheduled in Minden as well. But Great Basin Aviation, who came onto the airport as a flight school about a year and a half ago, just announced that they're going to pull out of Carson City and consolidate their operation at Reno. They started at Reno, and I brought them here to Carson as a satellite after Carson Aviation Services left. And one of the reasons that may have happened is I was talking with them about my conversation with the university or the college president and the demand for aviation professionals. And so they started seeking a 141 flight school certification, which means with this certification with the FAA, they can accept like student loan money. But that becomes much more complex with they couldn't split that operation and have a 141 flight school fully set up in Reno and Carson make that investment. They didn't have the personnel to to do that. So they decided to consolidate their operation in Reno where they're already based at Atlantic Aviation. However, that does open up opportunity on the airfield, and I am in discussion with some other people about bringing together a new flight school on the airport. So there's some discussion about that as well.
So as is the case with Steve, you're two steps ahead of me. Good.
I wouldn't go that far. But there's definitely dialogue about it.
Thanks for addressing that.
Yep.
Yes, sir, Clyde.
I'd just like to recognize several members of the public showed up tonight, and I just want to say thanks for participating with your airport. Thanks.
Okay. Public comment, last opportunity. Any members of the public want to throw some apples or tomatoes at us? Step on up. Okay. Have a shot. Okay, seeing none. As I mentioned, the next meeting is March 3rd. The next regular meeting will be the third Wednesday. Well, I'm sorry, what was that, Ken?
I was going to see if I had it on my calendar.
Wouldn't it be March?
I'm sorry.
It'll be the third Wednesday in March. 18th, sounds about right.
Yeah, that's true. 18th. The board meets on the 19th.
Okay.
Yeah, 18th.
With that, we're going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
We need to talk offline. My opportunity, perhaps in the next couple of days.
Okay.
Yeah, especially if you brought that.